This is a recording of Book of Mormon Stories and Giants by Brant A. Gardner, published in Interpreter, the Journal of Latter-day Saint Faith and Scholarship, read by Brant Gardner. In January 2018, the annotated edition of the Book of Mormon was published, attractively bound in leather. The Amazon listing for the edition, which is still available, has the following sales invitation, an invitation that even implies apostolic endorsement. This book has seen unprecedented demand. The first printing sold out in a matter of days. The second printing has now finally made it to the publisher, and the books are back in circulation. This particular edition seems to have struck a vital nerve among readers, unlike almost every similar publication over the last 50 years. This one's appeal to authority is not that of the scholars, but rather the authority of the prophets and apostles. The annotated edition of the Book of Mormon is explained and illustrated according to concepts promoted by those who espouse the Heartland model of the Book of Mormon. Stephen O. Smoot provided an extensive review of the book, included among other things that the editors approach archaeology with enormous carelessness and an overall untrustworthy methodology. The part of this review that is particularly important for this paper concerns a photograph that the annotated edition uses to illustrate Ether 134, which refers to the brother of Jared being a large and mighty man. Smoot remarks of this photo. The picture is juxtaposed next to a clipped 1925 newspaper article with a sensational headline, "Mound Giants in Indiana Said to Antedate Indian." However, the annotated edition of the Book of Mormon provides no documentation for when and where the photograph was taken, who took the photograph, and what the giant skeleton in the photograph really is. The obvious goal here in the annotated edition of the Book of Mormon is to associate the giant skeleton with the newspaper article describing giants discovered in a mound in Indiana, and thereby Ether 1 and 34 with these findings. The association of stories of giants with the Book of Mormon in editions of the Book of Mormon marketed to English-speaking Latter-day Saints creates a perception of new importance for some of these old stories. The apparently large number of sales of this edition suggests that these ideas are being represented to a large number of Latter-day Saints and are being accepted and believed. Giants in the Book of Mormon. The annotated edition of the Book of Mormon isn't the only place where we find Latter-day Saints promoting the claim that there were giants in the Book of Mormon. A website promoting the Heartland model looks at the question of giants in the Book of Mormon. Were there giants in the Book of Mormon? If so, where? And then the title, Jaredites in the Land Northward, and the verses, and the brother of Jared being a large and mighty man, Ether 1 and 34. And they were large and mighty men according to the strength of men, Ether 15 and 26. Under the title of Zarahemlites in the Land Southward, the verse, and they came down again, that they might pitch battle against the Nephites, and they were led by a man whose name was Coriantumr, and he was a descendant of Zarahemla, and he was a dissenter from among the Nephites, and he was a large and a mighty man. Helaman 1 and 15. If there are zero giant bones in the land of your model, Mesoamerica, Baja, Male, etc., then it is not Book of Mormon lands. In this declaration, giants are not only accepted as real, but as crucial evidence for the Book of Mormon, even suggesting that if there are no giants, then a geographic model of the Book of Mormon must be wrong. These declarations follow the typical early accounts of finding large bones. These reports are suggested to be proof of the Book of Mormon, a proof that is supported by specific verses in the Book of Mormon. It is perhaps understandable that some saints might assume the presence of giants in the Book of Mormon. After all, the Bible declares, "There were giants in the earth in those days," Genesis 6 and 4. "And we saw the giants, the son of Anak, which come among the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight," Numbers 13 and 33. That also accounted for a land of giants. Giants dwelt therein in old time, and the Ammonites called them Samsumumims, Deuteronomy 2 and 20. the valley of the son of Hinnom, and which is the valley of the giants of the north, Joshua 18 and 16. Without attempting to understand the biblical references to giants, the presence of the term might encourage some to suspect that Book of Mormon might also speak of giants. However, there is no mention of giants in the Book of Mormon. Zero. What we have are statements that Jared was a large and mighty man, Ether 1 and 34, and that some of the Jaredites were large and mighty men as to the strength of men, Ether 15 and 26. Those texts undeniably use the word large. Is large the same as giant? Those promoting websites related to the Heartland model of the Book of Mormon and the annotated edition of the Book of Mormon that incorporates their ideas certainly think so. Title: Why Believe That There Might Be Giants? The idea that there were giants in the Book of Mormon might be supported by many reports of giants in North American history. Stories of giants have occurred throughout the ages and in different cultures. These stories contrast with the scientific evidence that there never have been races of giant humans, even though there are some specific cases of unusually tall individuals. If the stories don't come from true experience, where do they come from? Humans are a storytelling people. Ancient people told stories, some of which have been written down. We still tell stories. Some of those also end up being written, increasingly on social media. Many have known no author. Stories are the way we understand our world and our place in it. We cannot help but create stories. It is built into the way our brains work. V.S. Ramachandran and Sandra Blakesley provide an overview of how our brains work to make sense of the world. At any given moment in our waking lives, our brains are flooded with a bewildering array of sensory inputs, all of which must be incorporated into a coherent perspective that's based on what stored memories already tell us is true about ourselves and the world. In order to generate coherent actions, the brain must have some way of sifting through this superabundance of detail and ordering it into a stable and internally consistent belief system. A story that makes sense of the available evidence. Each time a new item of information comes in, we fold it seamlessly into our pre-existing worldview. The brain wants to make understandable stories. The power of the brain to create these stories is highlighted in an experiment performed with a young man whose corpus callosum, the connector between the two hemispheres, had been cut. This meant that the two halves of the brain worked just fine, but they could not communicate with each other. That typically did not create a difficulty, but when information was presented that required the interbrain hemisphere communication, it produced an interesting result. In one experiment by Michael Gazzaniga and Joseph Ledoux, the young man with the severed corpus callosum was presented with a picture of a chicken claw on the right side of the screen, left hemisphere, and a picture of a snow scene with a snowman and a car stuck in the snow on the left side of the screen, the right hemisphere. And he was asked to choose from a series of picture cards the card that most obviously linked to the scene presented on the screen. The correct answer was a picture of a chicken for the chicken claw and a picture of a shovel for the snow scene. P.S. The young man pointed to the chicken with his right hand and to the shovel with his left. When asked what he had seen, he answered, presumably from his left hemisphere, "I saw a claw and I picked a chicken, and you have to clean out the chicken shed with a shovel." Gazzaniga and Ledoux's interpretation of this creative fabrication is that P.S. is speaking left hemisphere had to explain why P.S.'s left hand was pointing to the shovel. It was unaware of the snow scene because of the cut corpus callosum and had to supply the best theory it could give, given the limitation that it had to work with. Few of us have the problem that the young man had, but all of us have the problem of understanding the world around us and incorporating the limited information available to us into a cohesive story. That need to create stories leads directly to the stories of ancient giants. When English-speaking settlers arrived in the New World, they likely brought their own stories of giants, perhaps supported by the biblical mentions of giants. It didn't take them long to discover that the Native Americans they encountered also had stories of ancient giants. Quote, many sources on the Southeast American Indian literature mention post-contact Indians and describe them as tall and in stature. Indeed, explorers and travelers through the Americas reported that these newly discovered people were of great height, unquote. Though they were seen as tall in comparison to the newly arrived Europeans, there are Native American tales of even taller ancestors. The stories declare that there were giants. In 1970-73, Charles Betts recorded some of the Native Pawnee ideas, noting that they refused to pick up fossilized bones, believing them to be the remains of ancient giant humans. A Pawnee story teaches that, quote, the first men who lived on earth were very large Indians. They were very big and very strong and used to hunt the buffalo on foot. They were so swift and strong that a man could run down a buffalo, end quote. The combination of stories of very tall Native Americans and their own legends of giants raises the question of whether some of those stories might be true or, if not, what triggered them. Title, Native Legends of Giants and Their Sources. Native North American stories of giants originated not in direct experience with living giants, but with their bones found by later peoples. Adrian Mayer reports of one of the Pawnee origin stories. At last, Tirawa got angry and made waters to rise. The ground became soppy mud. These great people sank down in the mud and were drowned. The great bones found on the prairie are the bones of these people. We have been in deep canyons and have seen the big bones underground, the elders told Grinnell, and they convince us that these giants did sink into the soft ground. After the destruction of the race of giants, Tirawa created a new race of men, small, like those of today. Mayer has made a study of the ways that ancient people interacted with and formed stories about their discoveries of the bones of ancient animals. She began her studies of historical people's interactions with fossilized bones with the Greeks and the Romans. She discovered the very plausible origin of the gold-guarding griffin, which is a mythical animal with beak and wings of a bird and the body of a lion. She found that, along with an important gold trade route, were fossilized dinosaurs with beaks on the heads and claws on the feet. The later people took that information and created a fantastical beast around the confusing information of those bones. She writes, in medieval Europe, the stupendous bones of prehistoric animals were believed to belong to giants, saints, and celebrities from antiquity. The big bones were placed in coffins and reburied by the hundreds in medieval churches and saints as saints' relics. Mayer reports the clear connection between legends of giants and the discovery of fossils. This spectacle of enormous bones and teeth eroding out of the banks of the Husband at Claverack, south of Albany, New York, in 1705-6, drew curious crowds from miles around. Two groups of people in particular, the Indians of the Hudson Valley and Dutch and English farmers, debated the identity of the remarkable remains, and word of the New World giants electrified intellectual circles in the colonies and Europe. Taylor told himself that he had heard local Indians describe a giant of incredible magnitude, but he had disbelieved it till he saw the teeth of the Claverack skeleton in 1705. According to the Indians, probably Iroquoian-speaking Mohawks, Algonquin Mohicans, Abenakis, and Pequots, among others, the Claverack remains belonged to a giant called Witox, or Mauchops, who had lived about 8 or 10 generations ago, and some said that it died out centuries ago. Remembering what was quoted from Dr. Ramachandran above, the Native Americans and early Dutch and English settlers all had to find ways to create an understandable story out of the discoveries of the large fossil bones and teeth. They lived at a time prior to our more scientific understanding of extinct animals. Nevertheless, We should be cautious about being too quickly concluding that these people were naive. Mayer also reports, according to forensics anthropologist Douglas Hubelacher, non-human bones, especially femurs, can fool even the most experienced medical experts. In his study of FBI files, he found that about 15% of human bones thought to be those of murder victims turn out to be animal bones. Hubelacher points out the similarities of mammal anatomy, the finder's expectations, and the context of the discovery encourage the misidentification as human. Those same factors figured in antiquity. The widespread story of ancient giants shared enough similarities that they are reasonably connected to the stories told to explain the large fossilized bones, especially femurs, that might appear human except for their large size. With the combination of the finder's expectations and perhaps knowledge of other stories of giants, the task of clothing these fossilized animal bones in a giant human's skin is understandable. Understandable, but not historically accurate. Title: Very Tall Native Americans. The stories of the post-contact encounters with tall Indians are very different from the legends based on fossilized bones. These stories are not told of an ancient and extinct population, but rather one that was living at the time of the reports. One of those more modern stories is discussed in the story of the red-haired giants on the northern Paiute lore, discussed below. Fortunately, even though those encounters were hundreds of years in the past, modern archaeologists have access to the bones of many of those peoples, and modern methods can be used to determine the living height from the discovered bones, even when the full skeleton has not been found. A basic question about giants would be to define just how tall one must be to qualify as a giant. There's no absolute answer, and certainly it is one that can change over time for specific populations. There are many professional basketball players who do not look particularly giant when they are seen on the court, but standing next to someone of either average or less than average height, they would certainly count as giants. The question of how tall is tall has a generalized definition, at least when examining the bones of past populations. Classification of stature into tall and short is subjective, and absolute values are not written in stone. However, some authors sort these groupings as under 130 centimeters, 4 foot 3 inches, dwarf, under 150 centimeters, 4 foot 11 inches, very short, 160 centimeters, 5 foot 3 inches, short, 170 centimeters, 5 foot 7 inches, tall, 180 centimeters, 5 foot 11, very tall, 199.9 centimeters, 6 foot 7 inches, giant. Iskin and Kessel examined the remains of Native Americans in Florida and found that they range from 158.2 centimeters, 5 foot 2 inches, to 174.7 centimeters, that's 5 foot 9, in height. In a different study, Paul W. Sciulli, Kim N. Schneider, and Michael C. Mahaney examined the remains of 64 Native Americans, 35 male and 29 female. Their article focused on creating equations for determining stature, but they do report averages of 154.1 centimeters, or 5 foot 0 inches for the females, and 164.3 centimeters, 5 feet 5 inches, for the males. In the conclusion to their paper, Iskin and Kessel note, The osteologic data presented in this paper clearly contradict the historical writings and artistic representations. Indeed, Sciulli and Giessen, commenting on Ohio and Eastern Woodland Native Americans, point out that statures calculated from East Asian regression tables used by osteologists, will, if anything, produce overestimation of stature. With the exception of one individual, there is no record of osteometric data in which the average measurements exceed 179.9 centimeters, 5 feet, 11 inches. As with modern populations, there are individuals who are extremely tall. but they are the exceptions to an average member of that population. Thus, even with some rare exceptions, according to the best information available to archaeology, the discovered remains of Native North Americans fall into the tall category, but just below the very tall and far short of giant. Of course, it is possible that there are some, that there was some example of a much larger person. Robert Wadlow, 1918 to 1940, was truly giant, standing 8 foot 11 inches. He's widely considered the tallest human in history. The exceptional height of certain individuals is behind the photograph that was published in the annotated edition of the Book of Mormon. Stephen Smoot notes, "The skeleton in the photo is not that of an ancient Native American from Indiana. It's actually the skeleton of Charles Byrne, an Irishman who suffered from gigantism and died in 1783. His skeleton, the one in the photo used by the annotated edition of the Book of Mormon, is housed at the Royal College of Surgeons in London." These men were exceptional, and such tall individuals represent an extremely small percentage of the populations in which they lived. Similarly, one can find exceptionally short humans. Nevertheless, we have physical data sufficient to understand the typical populations, both of our time and in the past. Regardless of possible exceptional individuals, no race of giants, dead or living, has yet been discovered anywhere. Title: What About the Many Reports of Giants? Before the availability of modern archaeological methods and the science of osteology, there were stories of giants in the press, which was the internet of the day. Quote, "In the 1800s, reports began to surface of the discovery of very large skeletal remains in the burial mounds of North America. These skeletons were described as reaching 7 to 8 feet, 2.4 meters, in length, with a lower frequency of discoveries spanning 9 to 11 feet, 3.3 meters, in length, having very large skulls and gigantic lower jaw bones. Historians often detailed these remains in early local accounts, such as the following from Cass County, Michigan. It was a mound about 13 feet high, the diameter of its base about 50 feet. Portions of the skeletons were in good state of preservation. The femur or thigh bone of one of the males, which Dr. Bonin has now in his possession, is of great size and indicates that its owner must have been at least 7 feet in height." All this from Alfred Matthews, History of Cass County, Michigan, 1882. In the two examples listed here, both refer to the large size of specific bones, not a full skeleton. Those reports parallel those that we have seen in the misinterpreted fossil bones as human. We must remember that, as Dr. Ubelacher noted, that many animal bones so resemble human bones that mistakes can easily be made. Still, other reports at least appear more substantial. One of the specific reports I knew about from the beginning was a report from Indiana in the 1920s. In 1925, several amateurs digging in an Indian mound in Walkerton, Indiana, uncovered skeletons of 8 very ancient humans measuring in height from 8 to almost 9 feet. All 8 giants had been buried in substantial copper armor. Good hoaxes usually have good stories. And part of the story is some attempt to show that the fantastic information can be trusted. In this case, we're asked to trust several amateurs digging in an Indian mound. Also important is that this is a report of amateurs that was never corroborated. As with many stories on the internet, there is no evidence, only the report. No actual skeletons have been made available for study. The substantial copper armor has never been presented for examination. Another long-lived story concerns the red-haired giants of Lovelock Cave. One internet site reported, "In 1911, the Sunset Guano Mining Company was formed specifically to mine the guano. During the mining process, several artifacts were discovered, including bones, baskets, and weapons, indicating early settlers to the area. In 1924, interestingly, more than 10 years after they were found, archaeologists were notified of these artifacts. and even though several of them had either been lost or destroyed, more than 10,000 were successfully recovered. Two of the successfully recovered artifacts included a male and a female mummified red-haired giant. The male giant measured 8 feet tall, and the female giant measured 6.5 feet tall. It certainly has a sound of validity. The illusion of validity falls before the actual examination of the remains. Sheila Brooks, Carolyn Stark, and Richard H. Brooks examined John Reed's red-headed giants, Reed being the one who initially examined the remains from the Lovelock Cave. They noted that a biography of Reed specifically notes that a body was 7 feet 7 inches tall. They provide some interesting background on these stories. Quote, "Stories about red-headed giants have many variations, and they are found among several Great Basin peoples, such as the Northern Paiute and the Shoshone. Those which Reed may have heard involved a race of extremely tall red-haired people, referred to as the Tule Eaters, who were in the Humboldt Sink area. These people frequently were described as cruel, wicked, and possibly cannibalistic. Supposedly, the Northern Paiutes feared and hated them. According to one version of the story, fighting broke out between the giants and the Northern Paiutes. The Northern Paiutes chased the giants into Lovelock Cave and covered the entrance with brush, which they fired to suffocate the giants." End quote. There were indeed skeletal remains of at least 32 individuals, according to an archaeological excavation of Lovelock Cave in 1912. Hardly the 10,000 from the internet article. This expedition is the source of the confirmation of the red-haired giant stories, as Brooks, Starks, and Brooks examine that early excavation. Quote, "Reed conducted the first analysis of the skeletal remains he had recovered by measuring the thigh bones or the femora. The results of his measurements range from 14.5 inches to 18.5 inches. By estimating this length in relation to the presumed of his own thigh bone, he calculated that these individuals during their life had been 7 foot 7 inches for the 16 1/23 inch femur and 9 foot 6 for the 18.5 inch femur. Hair is preserved on some of the skulls, which still have soft tissues adhering. The hair is a brownish red in color, confirming the description in the red-headed giant stories of these people being red-haired. Because of his size estimate and the hair color, Reed was certain that he had found and identified the red-headed giants described in Northern Paiute stories he had heard in his youth." End quote. The authors did their own examination of the remains using more modern techniques. They provided a chart of the estimated stature of the skeletal remains. Most were from 5 foot 6 inches to 5 foot 9 inches tall. The tallest was 6 foot 1 inch, plus or minus 2 inches. Adrienne Meyer provides a detailed analysis of why remaining hair would appear red. Quote, "Depending on variable factors, temperature, light, humidity, acidity, chemical reactions, and minerals in the matrix, dark hair of extreme age often turns a rusty red or orange. That is why many Egyptian mummies have red-blonde hair, and the hair of well-preserved bodies of extinct mammoths and sloths is reddish, even though they may have been black or brown in life." Unquote. As with misinterpreting fossilized bones, some of the reported stories can be attributed to misinterpretations of the more recent Native American populations. However, at times the problem has not been so much misinterpretation as deliberate hoax. Among these are modern photographic manipulations, which simply make these hoaxes easier to document. One internet hoax was traced to an altered photograph created in 2002 that made it appear that there were normal-sized people next to a giant skeleton. Those trusting what their eyes told them and not understanding the ways in which the photograph had been manipulated can be somewhat forgiven for accepting the offered evidence. The prevalence of believers in these ancient giants shows in an article by Bradley Lepper, curator of the archaeology and manager of archaeology and natural history at Ohio History Connection. Quote, It seems I can no longer give a public program about Ohio's amazing ancient American Indian mounds without someone in the audience asking me about giants or the lost tribes of Israel or even aliens. I try to address these questions politely and explain that there is no hard evidence that any of these things had anything to do with Ohio's mounds. Occasionally, if the person asking the question is a true believer, they'll accuse me of lying and hiding the evidence that would prove me wrong. Some people actually believe that the Ohio History Connection, along with the Smithsonian Institution, has skeletons of giant humans in our collections that we keep hidden from the public. The first time someone accused me of this, I was dumbfounded and asked, "Why on earth would we do that?" Unquote. When the scientists, based on available hard data, declared that there is no evidence for these ancient giants, promoters of the myths turned to suggestions that the data really do exist, but are being hidden. Have the scientists ignored that evidence? In the modern internet era, it is all too easy for stories to be created and accompanied with photographs, which have been equally created to match the desired story. In September of 2020, USA Today Online reported the claim, "Giant skeletons were found by the thousands and destroyed by the Smithsonian." Continuing, an old hoax has resurfaced in an Instagram meme claiming that giant skeletons were found but destroyed because having to explain the existence of these skeletons contradicted the evolution of mankind and creation. The July 25 Instagram post by the user @conspiracytheories, which gained over 54,700 likes, reads, "Giant skeletons were found by the thousands, but most were destroyed and thrown in the ocean by the Smithsonian and the Vatican." The account has not responded to U.S. Today's request for comment. The claim has made its way across the internet in different variations over the years. A similar post appeared in 2015, claiming that the Supreme Court ruled that the documentation of giants was to be declassified. Jacksonville.org reported, finding the claim to be false. End quote. The Florida Times Union reported, mentioned in the USA Today report, quote, "Social media posts claim that photos of the remains of the giant race of people found in the Midwest disappeared because the Smithsonian Institution wanted to suppress the information. The facts." The post also says that the Supreme Court ruled last year that the documentation of the giants was to be declassified in 2015. Not true on either count. Title, Conclusions. Stories of giants that have become associated with the Book of Mormon are based in just that, stories. There is no scientific evidence upon which giants can be based. Still, we do have the concept of large and mighty men in the Book of Mormon. The phrase large and mighty is a literary set, but it was not exclusive to other similar literary phrases. Ammon was described as a strong and mighty man rather than large and mighty, Mosiah 7 and 3. Coriantumr is first described as large and mighty, Helaman 1 and 15, but then subsequent references only to a mighty man, Helaman 1 and 16. If not to giants, then to what do these ideas refer? As inheritors of at least some of the culture of the ancient Mediterranean, Book of Mormon writers would have participated in certain cultural values where physical traits were simply assumed and were not intended as physical descriptions. Bruce J. Molina and Jerome H. Nere describe those cultural understandings. Quote, "According to the data we possess, men tended to be perceived as either tall, medium, or short. In the ancient papyri from Egypt, for example, we find iconistic descriptions of persons, both men and women, who are described as of medium height or medium or less. In other descriptions, however, the designation of a man as tall or short may not be realistic or accurate and may actually be intended to convey information about character rather than stature. Generals and warriors are often portrayed heroically as tall. Herodes describes a certain Celtic warrior as Heracles, who was as tall as a tall Celt, about 8 feet in height. Generally, tall stature is related to the virtue of courage. It is naturally in aggressive males who command armies and rule empires. Unquote. When we remember that those who actually wrote the histories and the Book of Mormon have not met many of the people about whom they wrote, the probability that heroic character was declared through the descriptions becomes as likely in both the New World as in the Old. Why were there large and mighty men? They were heroic. It was intended to describe a quality and not a physical trait. The lack of contextual information that would allow us to read large as meaning tall or giant is lacking. The cultural heritage using physical descriptions for non-tangible characteristics strongly suggests that we should see these references as indicating either a military standing or a spiritual power, in the case of Ammon. The science is also clear. Scientists have recovered hundreds of human remains in the New World. Some are taller, some are shorter. None were giant. Despite the reports of giant skeletons, none have ever been presented for examination. Only the discoverer has ever seen them. In the 1800s, as well as in modern social media, exaggeration is frequent and outright hoaxes are not unusual. Although there are apparently many Latter-day Saints who support the Heartland model of the Book of Mormon, they should understand that when giants are claimed to be specific evidence for the Book of Mormon, it is an idea based on perhaps faithful over-enthusiasm. Nevertheless, it should not be accepted. Such claims do not support the Book of Mormon at all. This has been a recording of Book of Mormon Stories and Giants by Brant A. Gardner, published in Interpreter, Journal of Latter-day Saint Faith and Scholarship, Volume 67, 2025, read by Brant Gardner. This audio recording is copyrighted under a Creative Commons license and may be freely distributed if it remains unchanged. The journal and its website are credited and is for non-commercial use. A printed version of this and many other articles can be found at journal.interpreterfoundation.org. More information about the Interpreter Foundation, along with a wide array of additional resources, can be found at interpreterfoundation.org.